All right, let's go to the book of Habakkuk. Remember some of the scriptures in Habakkuk. The just shall live by his faith. Verse 14 of chapter 2, the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. Remember Habakkuk had complained to God, why are you going to punish Judah with a nation that's worse than Judah? And God, and he says, I'm so upset, I'm just going to go stand up here and wait for the answer. And then God says, okay, here's the answer. Woe to them that do this. Woe to them that do that. Woe to them that do this. We talked about the five woes. Verse 20, the Lord is in his holy temple, but all the earth keeps silence before him. Chapter 3 begins with a wild, ecstatic poem, or a poem with wild, ecstatic rhythm. And we can knock rock and roll, and we can knock a lot of the other music, but this was a wild, ecstatic rhythm to this song. To this particular song is what it was called for. Shigionoth means that. Wild, ecstatic rhythm is another explanation of Shigionoth. Chapter 3, verse 1, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet upon Shigionoth. It has to do with the type of rhythm it was put to. And with verse 3 through verse 15, we have a description of the appearance of God. This is called a theophany. A theophany, a description of the appearance of God. In this case, the appearance of God in power and might. And then the last four verses, 16, 17, 18, and 19, we see the effects of God's appearance upon mankind. So that's basically what we're talking about in chapter 3. After describing what was going to happen to Judah, after describing what was going to happen to the Chaldeans, remember the work that he would do in that particular time. Also, you can certainly feed into this that the Chaldeans in the end time, by the way, Chaldeans and Babylonians, while they weren't exactly the same people because some Chaldean rulers ruled on the throne of Babylon, they became intermixed and interchangeable as far as terminology. So when we talk about what was to happen to Chaldea, it was a literal area. But when we talk about, and the Chaldeans were kind of the ones who were in with the Babylonians. When we talk about the end time, we certainly know the Babylonians or the Babylonish system is what's to be give the trouble to the Israelites and the world at the end time. So he says in verse 2, O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. Now, is he talking about finishing up the work that Daniel talks about? Remember, in the midst of the week, these things, Christ's ministry would be stopped. And is he talking about finishing it in the midst of the years? Or is he just talking about doing the work? Is he talking about God's work doing the work? Is he talking about God doing his work? Certainly all those could be implied. In the midst of the years, make known. Again, another possible reference that God's church, and maybe even the two witnesses at that time. It's interesting, last Sabbath two people came up and announced that they were two witnesses again. We said, well, wait a minute, you can't be. We had this lady who was one of the two witnesses not too long ago. That makes three witnesses now. And it is amazing. At headquarters, see, where is somebody going to go to announce that he or she or they are one of the two witnesses? Where are they going to go? And isn't it a few more days or whatever, a few more weeks when somebody's supposed to come up in one of the graveyards or Mr. Armstrong's supposed to be resurrected to be one of the two witnesses? That's what one group believes. And it's so, you know, you can't let yourself start thinking that way. We had a guy back years ago when I was in college who, you know, nice guy, quiet guy, but in his mind, who knows what's going on there when maybe the soundness of God's Spirit is not taking place. The thinking he was one of the two witnesses, or he was Elijah, or whatever else, or, you know, an angel, or something. Yeah, you say, well, wait a minute, let's see you appear and disappear if that's the way you are. Disappear in front of me if you're an angel. They don't disappear. It's amazing, you know, how people get these thoughts. And of course, nobody ever comes and says, hey, I'm just a lowly servant. Nobody comes up and announces they're a lowly servant. Most of them are announcing, he's made strange but true, I'm the one. I remember seeing a picture when I was back in Illinois, working in St. Louis, Illinois area. There was a picture in the paper. I cut it out. I had it for years. I don't know where it is now. But it was this guy. He had on a robe, and he had buttons all over it. I'm the Christ, strange but true. He had a hat on with buttons all over it. He was Jesus. He was Christ. He was this. I'm the Lord. I'm the one. Hard to believe, but I am. Yeah. How many people just go, hey, look, I am a servant. I don't want to be a servant. Now, they'll tell you, well, I'm just a humble servant, even though I'm one of the two witnesses. It's amazing. Here at headquarters, you will tend to find people gravitate out here because they want to say, this is where the work is being done. This is where the heartbeat of the work is, and this is where many of the leaders are, so let's do it. Let's proclaim whom we are. Robert?
I wonder if the other churches have the same problem.
Probably not so much, because how many churches deal in prophecy as much as we do? Not that many deal in prophecy. I'm sure they have problems with mentally unstable people, but I don't think that they would have the problems with individuals proclaiming that they are a prophetic person. Because we deal with prophecy a lot, and end time prophecies, a lot of people fantasize themselves into these particular positions. And yeah, I mean, you have to have a reason why you put yourself into the scriptures. You don't just decide you're somebody. It's very, very dangerous to do that. So you have to have a reason. There has to be a reason. There has to be logic, reason for it. And it was interesting because when these two fellows came backstage, I thought that I recognized one. I shook his hand and I called him by some other name, and he said, no, he was so-and-so. And I said, oh. And I looked, and then when he saw Mr. DeCotch, and they just walked back. They said, we want to talk to you, or we have to talk to you. We have to talk to you. See, when somebody just says, oh, do you mind if I talk to you for a few minutes? It's a little different. Somebody says, we have to talk to you. My antennas go right up, and I said, Mr. DeCotch knew them from his years out here. So he went back and talked to them, and I said to Mike Rasmussen, I said, those guys, I bet, are the two witnesses. And so I said, you might want to have people just watching on each side in case they want to do something physical. And so they kept an eye. And sure enough, when they left a few minutes, I give Mr. Tkach a lot of credit. He kept his cool. He didn't jump all over them and yell at them. Kept his cool. A very patient man. And they left. And after they left, was I wrong? That he said they thought they were the two witnesses. So once you've been around for a while, you get to pick up when people, you know, this look and this manner and this way they conduct themselves. Just like that lady that told me, you know, she thought she was one of the two witnesses. She said, I've got to speak to you. What do you want to speak to me? You don't even know me. Or maybe I gave the sermon. Maybe you want to talk to me about the sermon. Give you that benefit of the doubt. But the moment she said, I've got to speak to you, I knew there was something there. Then when she said she'd like a private room, it's too noisy out here, just tell her. And then when we went in, she said, please sit down because I have much to tell you. Then I knew. And so I was immediately on guard, that type of an approach. Anyway, people want to think they are in the midst of the years make known. God's work is trying to make known. Now, whether the two witnesses will be doing the making known at the end of the work when the famine of the Word of God comes in or what. It says, in wrath, remember mercy. Even in difficult times, troublesome times, when people deal wrathfully and wrongfully with you, remember mercy. Verse 3, God came from Timon. Now, Timon and this general area described could very well mean the area of Petra. So he may well have been over in the area of Petra, if that's the place. Okay, if that's the place. God came from Timon, so he may have paid a visit to the Edomites at that time. And the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. Selah was a musical term meaning pause, take a breath. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand. Horns are symbolic of strength. Remember the seven heads and ten horns, the ten horns being having to do with the various kingdoms. The symbol of strength. In this case, God did five. I don't know if that has any significance, or had horns coming out of his hand. Sorry, not five. And there was the hiding of his power. Horns symbolic of power. Of course, he had it in his hand. He wasn't showing them all over. He hasn't unleashed it yet. We'll see when he begins to unleash it. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. So whatever God wanted to do, it's at his disposal. He can dry up rivers. He can cause it not to rain. He could let the sun be brighter. He could do any number of things. He's got it at his. He's got all power in heaven and in earth at his disposal. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations. The everlasting mountains were scattered. What you think of as power, what you think of as stable and strong, when you look at the majesty of the mountains, to think that they can just be toppled down at God's command is unthinkable to us as human beings, but they can. The perpetual hills did bow. Notice, his ways are everlasting. Though the mountains, what we look upon as solid and staunch, could be toppled. And of course, you could be talking about the mighty nations as opposed to the smaller nations as well. Though they could be toppled, God's ways are everlasting. The teachings, the instructions, the judgments, the laws are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, and the curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. This was a neighbor to Midian. You can look on a map and see Midian is sort of down southern Negev area, as at least as it's listed in that area over in Sinai. That particular area is what was called Midian. All these areas described, it's talking about what's going to happen in and around Jerusalem. We already talked about coming out of Timon. What's going to happen in his holy land as he brings his people back? And of course, here he's talking about what they did to Judah. What will in the future be done to Judah? Is Judah going to escape? No, Judah's going to get its too. Probably after Israel falls, will get its comeuppance. Was the Lord displeased against the rivers? Was your anger against the rivers? Was your wrath against the sea that you did ride upon your horses and your chariots of salvation? Apparently the rivers are going to dry up as a result. You know Revelation 19 talks about God coming back in a horse and his angels following him. Revelation chapter 19. Verse 11 says, I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. He that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. Then you find armies, verse 14, followed him upon horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. It talks about what goes forth and the treading the winepress and the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. Revelation 19, verse 15. Coming back here, so he's describing the appearance of God at the end time. Not only would Chaldea get theirs then, when God returns, when he comes back, they're going to get it again. The system is going to get it. Notice verse 9. Your bow was made quite naked. What he's saying is you took the cover off. You unwrapped your power. You took your bow. It was made naked. It was made ready to work, ready to use. According to the oaths of the tribes, even your word, Selah. You did cleave the earth with rivers. So you divided it, you made various sections of rivers. The mountains you saw, and they trembled. Or the mountains saw you, rather, and they trembled. Of course, you could symbolic, a mountain symbolic in prophecy of a nation. But also the mountains themselves would skip. The overflowing of the water passed by. Again, you could talk about water, according to Revelation, even being a type of nations, of peoples, of tongues. You want that reference? I can give it to you quickly in the book of Revelation, chapter, let's see if I can pick it out here. Yes, chapter 17 and verse 15, the waters which you saw. Now, those are the waters of Revelation. But here we could say that it's talking about nations, mountains. It's talking about coming down and dealing with the nations. The waters could be symbolic of the peoples. By the deep uttered his voice and lifted up its hands on high. It also looks, it seems like he's using either the peoples of the earth or he's using waters to destroy the peoples of the earth. We know some of the plagues are aimed at the waters, the seven last plagues listed in Revelation. Verse 11. the sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At God's appearance, this is some of the effects, the power, the might, the majesty, as described by Habakkuk. At the light of your arrows they went, at the shining of your glittering spear. Just seeing God there as a warrior. You might want to hold your place and notice Zechariah 14 and verse 3. When God comes back the second time, He's not coming back as a humble carpenter of Nazareth. He's coming back as King of Kings, as a great warrior. Verse 3 says, Zechariah 14, "Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when He fought in the day of battle." Just like a warrior would fight in battle. Who knows? As when He fought in battle. Maybe He's talking about the battle previously against Satan the devil. Who knows? But when He comes back, He's coming back as a warrior. When you see Him with His spear, just like the Seattle Seahawks when they saw Bo Jackson last night for the Raiders. Tore them up every time he got the football. He ran over, through, and above the Seattle Seahawks defense in professional football. He ran like 220-some yards and 18 carries. For a while, he had a 17-yard average when he touched the ball running. Most people would be happy to have a 17-yard average every time they caught the ball. He had it every time he ran with the ball, 17 yards average. He ran one back for 91 yards, another one for 40 or 50. So he was really clipping them off there. But when you see somebody like that, and this is what they all said, as soon as he's given the ball, look out. And you see God with His spear, and it's a poor comparison because God's a lot more powerful than Bo Jackson. But when you see God with His spear and God with His bow ready to be used in His arrows, you better look out, world. You better look out, nations. You thought you were so mighty. You thought you were so powerful. And remember the scenario that we see painted in other prophecies is that the nations are going to gloat over the fall of God's people as they once did. Lamentations tells you about that. They're going to gloat over the fall of God's people. They're going to laugh and ridicule the Israelites, the Jews. They're going to taunt them. You were this proud. You were this great people. I don't think God likes it too much either, right at this point in time, the way some of the nations are treating us economically, not propping up the dollar like they should. The United States seemingly is trying to do its part. We need to really pray about that. Of course, look over in Haiti. Terrible situation over in Haiti, where people murdering others because they want to go vote. How would you like to be in a polling booth just trying to do your duty to your country and be mowed down with machine gun fire? I had one lady cowering over in the corner, a picture in the LA Times, a couple of dead bodies in front of her. They showed on the news. People shot, their bodies are still lying in the streets. Nobody even goes over and drags them away. Let them lie there. Groups of young people standing around, oh, there's a body there. Look at the blood coming out of it. You know how horrible. God sees this. God gets sick of the world in its ways and what it does to each other. It says in verse 12, "You did march through the land in indignation. You did thresh the heathen in anger." Now, is God doing it because He hates the people? No. He's doing it because He says three sins and then four. "I'm filled up and beyond. Now you're going to get yours." But they're going to get theirs ultimately to turn for their salvation. He's going to give them a good spanking. Like a child that throws a temper tantrum should get a good spanking. They've shown how people handle temper tantrums. One series I had seen, when the child threw a temper tantrum in the middle of a grocery store, the mother threw a temper tantrum. What you're supposed to do. You want to teach your child what it's like? You throw that. And then everybody thinks both of you are stupid. Both of you are uncontrolled. Both of you are unrestrained. That's what they say to do. And many mothers, their child won't do, saying, "Bye!" You know, "Okay, you're going to go the other way. Bye! Mom is leaving." Little kids are, "Bye, Mom!" You know, "I don't care." Oh, well, that didn't work. All this stupidity that God sees in the world. He said, "You did thresh the heathen in anger." He's going to give them a good spanking, but He still loves them. He wants them to change. He's upset with them. He's upset with their actions. He wants them to change ultimately. Some of them will be put to death. And then when they're resurrected, the great white throne judgment, they're going to remember they came up against God. And they're going to change. You went forth for the salvation of your people, even for salvation with your anointed. You wounded the head out of the house of the wicked by discovering the foundation to the neck. In fact, let me read that from paraphrase. Probably brings it out a little smoother reading. Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 13. He says, "You went out to save your chosen people. You crushed the head of the wicked and laid bare his bones from head to toe." Just you completely expunged him, extinguished him. Verse 14. "You did strike through with the staves the head of his villages. They came out as a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was as to devour the poor secretly." He puts it this way, "You destroyed with their own weapons those who came out like a whirlwind, thinking Israel would be an easy prey," or Judah in this case. Verse 15, "You did walk through the sea with your horses, through the heap of great waters." And again, you could say he waded through the waters with his horses, or you could say he waded through the people with his horses as well. "Your horsemen marched across the sea, the mighty waters piled high," is how paraphrase puts it. And then verses 16 through 19, we find the effect. When I heard this, my belly trembled. When I heard of the awesomeness, the might, the power, the majesty, the greatness, the fierceness of God, when I heard, my belly trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones. All of a sudden, they just felt weak. I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. I hoped that I would rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops. Who are those troops going to be? Initially angels, but what about the saints that join God? What about the saints that are resurrected to meet him in the air and come back with him? Remember, the seventh trump signals the seven last plagues. Seventh trump also is the alarm clock that wakens all of the people for the first resurrection. It signals a time of change when you'll be given a spirit body. So if you like fights, you're going to be in a good one. But you won't be able to be hurt. And you'll have all the power on your side. So the game is stacked against the opposition. You'll win. Verse 17, "Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, there shall be no herd in the stalls," because of the type of the time it was. Although it's not a great time, it's not a time for rejoicing, it's not an annual festival time and harvesting season, because there have been famine, there have been pestilence, there have been difficulties upon the earth. Though that's not going to be taking place, yet I will rejoice. Though it's not a time of rejoicing at harvest. As many of God's festivals were built around the harvest season. Many peoples of the world have festivals around harvest time. "Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation." I too, should joy in God, because he is the one that can give us salvation, not us, not we ourselves. Verse 19, "The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like hinds' feet." What are hinds' feet like? Fleet, swift, agile, nimble. He'll help you during that time to be agile and nimble as a person, as an individual, and of course as a spirit being. You'll be there, the fleetness. "He will make me to walk upon the high places of the earth." God's going to give you a freshness and a zest for life. Notice he says, "To the chief singer on my stringed instruments. I wrote this poem for them to put to wild ecstatic rhythm," because it's talking about the time when God is coming back. And he's going to come back and save his people from the hand of the heathen who fed themselves on God's people, who've laughed at them, who've put them down and gloated over their victory over the United States. "We finally got her. She did it two times to us. She stopped us twice, but she won't stop us again." When they get the United States and Britain, there will be great rejoicing in the foreign capitals of the world. And God won't like it any more than you like to see your kid hurt, though sometimes it may be good for them
for a while. You don't like people rejoicing over it. So that concludes the book of Habakkuk. It's a good book. It's an interesting book. There's some who say the name Habakkuk, by the way, wasn't even a Hebrew name. It's the only one named in the Bible. Some say it may come from another language rather than Hebrew. It's a similar word like it in Hebrew, but not quite. Okay, that's the book of Habakkuk. Finish that. Let's move into the book of Zephaniah. The book of Zephaniah is a very interesting book. In fact, there's one unique point about Zephaniah. Did you know that the term Day of the Lord is used more in the book of Zephaniah than any other single book in the Bible? Did you know that? The actual terminology, Day of the Lord, is used more in the book of Zephaniah, this three-chapter book, than any other book in the Bible. And when I read that, this is preposterous. This can't be. Surely there's some mistake. I thought of Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. You know, those are large. Daniel. Go ahead. Prove me wrong. Check it out. Look it up in a Strong's exhaustive concordance. You will not find it used as many times. It's used seven times in this short book. The term Day of the Lord. I'm talking direct reference. I'm not talking indirect reference. I'm not talking in that day, at that time, at the end, in that time. I'm talking about the actual terminology. Day of the Lord is used more times in the book of Zephaniah than any other book in the Bible. Isn't that interesting? Bet you never knew that before. How many knew that before? Thank you. One. More times. So what we'd say the theme is definitely the Day of the Lord. Also talks about warnings to Judah. This book was written in the Chaldean period. And we would say, we would date it. You have your hand up. I'll go over that with you quickly. For the book of Zephaniah, I'll cover background and I'll stop, give you a break. In fact, I'll stop right now and give you a break. It's a logical time. The book of Zephaniah, by the way, Candace is going up to get some more of these handouts for you so we can have enough. If you want to take a look at your handout, Zephaniah means God has hidden, in the sense that God will protect. God has protected, or God will keep. There's a special treasure is the implication, that God has hidden. We feel that the book was written sometime before 621 B.C. That's when the Reformation of Josiah was virtually completed, when he was managing to turn around a wayward country. 625 to 623 B.C. is when we give as the date. So if you're asked for the date for this book, 625 to 623 is what we're suggesting. Theme, a warning of disaster to Judah, and the Day of the Lord. The Day of the Lord being a definitely strong one. Outline, chapter 1, judgment on all, especially Judah. Chapter 2, judgment on specific peoples. These specific peoples, once again, were north, south, basically east and west of Judah or Jerusalem. And chapter 3, the appeal to Jerusalem to repent and promises to come. And virtually from verse 9 through verse 20 of chapter 3 are millennial scriptures or leading up to the millennium. Chapter 3 is a wonderful chapter. Of course, verse 9, you have a pure language finally being restored to the earth. And you have verses 14 through 20, an excellent description of God's return and the happiness and joy felt by the peoples at that time. Zephaniah was apparently of royal blood. He was the great-great-grandson of Hezekiah. The great-great-grandson of Hezekiah, and may well have been a cousin or a relative of Josiah. He speaks more from a... He does not speak as one from the lower class. The book is... He speaks, in a sense, from a position of someone who's seen what's going on rather than having to go through it, like perhaps Micah or a local elder type. This one was, Zephaniah was more of the priestly, not priestly, but kingly line, and one who would look at it as happening from a royal position. He does speak forcefully and plainly, relates his message. Does yours say Ammon to Ammon? Be better to put Josiah. What's in the latest one? The change to Josiah since my day? Yeah, change Ammon to Josiah on your handout. Relates his message to Josiah, king of Judah, not Ammon, king of Judah. He mentions the day of the Lord more than any other book. He is a contemporary of Habakkuk and Jeremiah. He was after Nahum. And Zephaniah was probably Josiah's cousin. Yes, Ken? Yeah, where it says Ammon. Does yours have under miscellaneous that speaks forcefully and plainly and relates his message to? Does say Josiah? It should say Josiah. Son of Ammon. Okay. Okay. Good. Mine just says to Ammon. So if yours just says to Ammon, change it to Josiah. King of Judah. That was a mistype and consequently it multiplied many times over. You might want to take a look in the, let's see if there's some of the things, Kay, that I wanted to cover with you. Covered the outline already. He speaks forcefully and relates it. Josiah's reign was from 640 to 609. Josiah was in the process of cleaning up Judah. He has the most complete genealogy of all the prophets. Does Zephaniah. 2 Kings gives some background, actually, if you wanted to read through 2 Kings chapter 21 through 23. You will get a good background to the book. Reasons for dating the book at this time is because there's no mention of the Chaldeans yet. No mention of the Chaldeans is coming in as a power. Judah. Yes. 2 Kings chapters 21 through 23. 2 Kings chapters 21 through 23. In fact, if you want to turn there, we'll get just a brief bit of background. 2 Kings chapter 21. Notice verses 19 and 20. Ammon was 22 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 2 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was, and it gives her name, Meshulamith, the daughter of Heraz of Jotba. Well, how would you like to have that name? Anyway, verse 20, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord as his father Manasseh did. And he walked in all the way that his father walked in. And you see the powerful example. You see what an example can do? How many times in here? Took a rather brave individual, a rather special individual, to change the course of affairs of a family. And he said he walked just like his dad did. Because an example is powerful. I'll tell you, you can say all you want to your children, but the way you are speaks loud and clear. And you cannot hide the way you are. It comes through in your children. If you're critical, if you're picky, if you're analytical, if you're hard to please, that comes through in your children. If you're judgmental, it comes through in your children. One young man, I remember, made the comment, look at that harlot across the street. Made a judgment on a young girl because the young girl was sitting across the street with her boyfriend on the doorstep. Called her a harlot. Now, why would he do that? He probably heard his dad making comments, driving down the street, see somebody walking with excessive makeup, might call them a harlot. Maybe they just wear lots of makeup. Not everybody who wears lots of makeup is a harlot. They hear you being judgmental, they'll be judgmental. They hear you being kind, they'll be kind. If you reach out to others, they'll reach out to others. If you're stingy, they'll be stingy. They walk in your ways. It takes a rather special young person to balk and turn from the way his forefathers did. That's why if you've been called into God's work and your parents haven't, it's taken a rather special calling for you to change. A rather special individual to respond. It really means that. Going on, verse 20, we read about that. He walked in the evil ways. Verse 26, he was buried in his sepulcher in the garden of Uzzah, and Josiah his son reigned in his stead. So he died, Josiah took over. Chapter 22, verse 1, Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jedidah, the daughter of Adiah of Bosketh, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, and walked in all the way of David, his father, his forefather, and turned not aside to the right hand nor to the left. There was a person who walked the way of God. And it came to pass in the 18th year of King Josiah that he sent this person forth. Notice verse 8, some of the deeds of Josiah. Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan. So they found the word of the Lord. Verse 11, it came to pass when the king heard the words of the book that he rent his clothes. Verse 13, he said, go and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people, for all Judah, concerning the words of this book that is found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is kindled against us, because our fathers have not hearkened to the words of this book to do according to all that is written concerning us. Then verses 19 and 20. God said, because your heart was tender and you've humbled yourself before the Lord when you heard what I spoke against this place and against the inhabitants thereof, 2 Kings 22:19, that they should become a desolation and a curse, and have rent your clothes and wept before me, I also have heard you, says the Lord. Behold, therefore, I will gather you to your fathers, and you shall be gathered to your grave in peace. Your eyes shall not see all the evil which I will bring upon this place. They brought the king, and they brought the king word again. Josiah was a good king. Chapter 23, verse 2. The king went up to the house of the Lord, and all the men of Judah, all the inhabitants of Jerusalem with him, the priests, the prophets, all the people, both small and great. And he read in their ears all the words of the book of the covenant, which was found in the house of the Lord. Verse 5, put down idolatrous priests. Notice verse 5. He put down the idolatrous priests. Verse 14, he broke in pieces the images, cut down the groves, and filled their places with the bones of men, those who would not repent and change. Verse 21, Passover was commanded. And verse 25, and like him was there no king before him that turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, neither after him arose there any like him. Josiah was a good king. You know, when I was doing a study through the book of Kings, it's so discouraging. One king after another, bad, wicked, evil. He did evil. You get tired of reading about the kings of Israel, and you get tired reading about the kings of Judah. And boy, when I come across somebody like this, you mark him up and you write it and you put it, highlight it, and all the rest. This is a good king. This is a king like God hoped that they would have. It's too bad. See, that it didn't last, because you have the people going their way. But a good king does much for his country. He was in the process of doing this. Some of the lessons we might learn, denunciation and threat are some of the main themes of Zephaniah, some of the main styles, I should say, of Zephaniah. I believe it's Feinberg mentions he's one of the most difficult of the prophets to understand. Some of the lessons you could learn from Zephaniah, perhaps I should leave it to you, but I'll state three of them. One, God is going to punish all People think they get away with it, but they won't. Remember the Ecclesiastes 8:11, understanding that though evil doesn't befall a person who does wrong right away, though he isn't reckoned with, he thinks everything is fine. God says it won't be good for you in the end. God will deal with and punish all. Secondly, the day of the Lord will not be a pleasant time. It's not going to be a happy time. It's not going to be a good time. It's going to be a good time only in the sense that following it is the wonderful world tomorrow. But it's going to be a time of wrath. It's going to be a time of trouble. It's going to be a time of difficulty. So that's another lesson. And the third one is the promise of the world tomorrow will be unity and harmony. Imagine what our world would be like if everybody could understand everybody. If there was one pure language. You hear the translation, you see Premier Gorbachev speak on television, and he's speaking with gusto, and then you have this rather non-emotional, unemotional voice coming out telling you the translation. Wouldn't it be nice when you could actually hear and see and understand what somebody's saying with the inflection that he intends? Because part of the words are the color. Part of what someone says has to do with his muscle tone. Has to do with the look on his face, has to do with his body language, as well as the words that come forth. And the flavor with which he says those words can't be understood in translations, not too easily. So thank God for the day there will be one pure language, and there will be harmony and peace on the earth. All right, let's go to Zephaniah, chapter 1. I think that's enough background. You can read more in the books, in both Robinson as well as Feinberg for more background materials. The Chaldean period. Yes? What's that? Any other product? Yeah. In fact, I don't know if I brought it along here or not. The actual term Day of the Lord is used like maybe one or two or three times in some of the other books. You have the minor prophets. It's not used that many times. I guess I didn't bring. Let's see if I brought those other notes where I actually had it listed. How many times in the other minor prophets? I'm sorry. Yeah, more. The genealogy is used more than any other. Of any of the minor prophets. Yeah. Chaldeans. No mention of the Chaldeans. Yeah, Ken. Who turned his heart to the Lord. He was coming out of a difficult situation. David became king after Saul. He didn't come as far as lineage was concerned. He was picked. His heart was already turned to God when he was picked. I think we turned his heart to the Lord. I don't think he would be considered greater than David. I wouldn't consider him greater than David, but a statement made of his greatness. Well, I'm sure he had plenty of advisors when he was that young. Yeah, who helped him run the government. But he was king as more of a figurehead at that time. Chloe? During the Chaldean period, but the Chaldeans are not named specifically in the book. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the fowls of the heaven, fishes of the sea, the stumbling blocks with the wicked. Whatever they've tried to put for others, they'll fall in them. I will cut off man from off the land, says the Lord. I'll also stretch out my hand upon Judah. I will also deal with Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place, the name of the Chemarims. Chemarims having to do with the idolatrous priests, stumbling blocks also being the idols that were set up. God's upset with what's been going on. And the priests. So this was before Josiah had effectuated the changes. God was upset with what was going on. And of course, he'll be upset with what goes on in our age too, because God is not a respecter of persons. And them that worship the host of heaven. Isn't it interesting that Catholics believe you can pray to the host of heaven, that there's the communion of the saints, that there's on earth the church militant, there's in purgatory the church suffering, in heaven the church triumphant, and all three of these pray to each other, talk to each other in prayer. pray for each other. That's why they pray to the Virgin Mary. It's called the communion of saints. They're just talking to one of the church members. They're just having fellowship. So they look at it, but of course, you know, they kiss the pictures of Mary or whatever other things that they have, paraphernalia of her. Worship the host of heaven. And of course, you have astrology, which also worships the host. Astrologers, people look for their astrological sign and want to read about it to find out what's going to happen to them. If you ever wonder how people are, how people look at mysterious and strange, go to a Chinese place, and when you get your fortune cookie and open it up, don't you read with glee what's on there? I mean, you don't really believe it, but if it says something good about you, you kind of hope it happens. Because, you know, people want to look into the mysterious. Of course, worshiping the host of heaven has to do with the heavenly signs and all the rest. Not heavenly signs, signs in the heavens as far as the astrologers are concerned. Them that worship the host of heaven upon the housetops, them that worship and that swear by the Lord, and that swear by Malcolm either Moloch or the god of the Amorites. Either Moloch, M-O-L-E-C-H, or the god of the Amorites. It says the idol of the Amorites. Might be the same as Moloch or Milcom. So here are people, it doesn't really matter to me whether I worship the Lord or whether I swear by Malcolm another god, the Amorite god, doesn't matter. Them that are turned back from the Lord, and those that have not sought the Lord nor inquired for him. Remember, we want to seek God. Isaiah 55 tells us how. Seek the Lord. Call upon him while he is near. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Because if you wait too long, he might not be around anymore for you. Seek the Lord. Call upon him while he is near. Isaiah 55, verse 6, 6, 7, and 8, that area, talks about it. Verse 7, I'll stop with verse 7. Hold your peace at the presence of the Lord God, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Hold your peace at the presence of the Lord, because God is going to set his hand to deal with you, to deal with the nations at that time, and particularly to deal with Jerusalem and Judah. For the Lord has prepared a sacrifice. He has bidden his guests. Verse 8, it shall come to pass in the day of the Lord, that's two already, in the day of the Lord's sacrifice, that I will punish the princes, the king's children, and all such as are clothed with strange apparel. When you read Zephaniah through, you get the very definite feeling of the more broad application of the term Day of the Lord, in the sense that he's not talking merely about the end time. He's also talking about the time when God reckons with a particular people. When he reckons with a particular people, the Day of the Lord, the Day of the Lord is going to come upon you, in addition to the Day of the Lord between the heavenly signs and the return of Christ, or the beginning of the millennium. In addition to the day of the Lord, that means any end time activity, as we see the day of the Lord used in that sense as well in other places. So he says, the day of the Lord is coming, verse 9, in the same day also I will punish all those that leap on the threshold, which fill their master's houses with violence and deceit. Actually, the term leap over the threshold. They're anxious, they're eager to plunder. They can't wait to get out and do evil and fill their master's houses with evil and deceit. Strange apparel. It's interesting to read about the strange clothing styles of other nations. Sansino brings that out, verse 8. Strange apparel, how we like to follow fads, how we like to go and follow the various trends that come, whether they be good or bad. Now the miniskirt's coming back, you know. Higher and higher it goes. Miniskirt. You see some people in them, you know, barely able to sit on. It must be very uncomfortable, ladies, you know, to have to keep your legs together all the time. You know, you can't even feel a little comfortable to have your dress cover your leg. You have to keep together everything you do. You have to be careful how you sit and how you stand and how you climb stairs and all the rest, because could be very exposing type of situation. read Sansino in that particular section. He talks about the strange apparel, how they wanted to follow the other nations, become like the world. It doesn't mean that we should be backwards either, wear old, out-of-date clothes. You know, what's all these? They still don't have any holes in them. Of course, some of my polyester pants that I had, all the stripes and colors and everything else in them, nothing could destroy those, not even fire. They would be good forever. I've learned my lesson. It'll take a long time. My daughter Susan says, Dad, why don't you go out and buy? You need to go out and just get a pair, you know, with a little bit of a stripe in it, you know, a little pattern in it. I says, right now I've learned my lesson. I bought lots of them before. Go with my various sport coats. I said, no more. I loaded up with them, and then they all went out of style. So I forget. I'll stay with the solids. They stay in. They may not be as attractive, may not be as dashing, but they stay in. Anyway, I'll let you go.